Maura Cannelli, and I am going to talk to you a little bit about New York City's food retail environment. Jen mentioned some of our efforts in restaurants, and I have no relationships to disclose. So just a little background of why New York has focused some efforts in the restaurant environment. Some things that we know is that Americans are consuming an estimated one-third of total calories and spend almost half of their annual food dollars on foods prepared outside the home, and that consumers routinely underestimate the calorie content of these meals. We also know that there's a significant portion of total daily calories that are consumed from fast food. And in New York City specifically, when we look at some of the indicators that we track, we see that adults and children are consuming one or more sugary drinks per day. We don't know where those are being consumed, but we have a feeling that they're being consumed in a lot of these food service establishments. So in New York City, scope is also a big thing that we take into consideration when we focus our work. And in the city, there are over 24,000 restaurants. There are over 5,000 mobile food vendors, and there are numerous snack bars at movie theaters and stadiums. And all of these fall under the jurisdiction of the city and of the New York City Board of Health. And specifically when we look at restaurants, we see that chain restaurants, and we define chains a little differently than the way that it has been defined nationally, and a chain in New York is defined as 15 or more locations. We see that overall, that accounts for about 10% of those 24,000 restaurants, but estimates are that they account for 35% of total traffic, which is a pretty significant piece. And so we have, over the last 6 years, we've adopted through our Board of Health three policies aimed at improving the nutritional quality of the food in restaurant environments. And I'll just quickly go through a little bit of what each is and why. So in 2006, the New York City Board of Health adopted an amendment to its health code that would prohibit restaurants from storing, using, or serving foods containing partially hydrogenated vegetable oil shortenings, margarines, if 0.5 grams or more artificial trans fat per serving existed. And why we really focused on trans fat was that we knew that cardiovascular disease is the leading cause of death in the U.S. and that risk is increased by poor diet. We know that artificial trans fat is an unnecessary ingredient that poses a substantial risk to heart health. We know that industrial sources of trans fat can be replaced with more healthful options. We know this is feasible. And that the incidence of coronary heart disease in the U.S. could be reduced by 6 to 19% if Americans decreased their proportion of total energy intake from trans fat by just 2%. And so in New York, this passed in 2006, and went into effect in two different phases. Phase one went into effect in July of 2007, and phase two in July of 2008. And I would just like to point out in this graph that prior to the health code amendment, we actually attempted a voluntary initiative with restaurants, our educational campaign, and we surveyed the results of that. And so this is just a little bit to illustrate what Jen was talking about just now in terms of using the law in this way, that the voluntary effort failed significantly. There was absolutely no decrease in trans fat during that period. But there has been substantial decrease since the health code restriction went into effect. And so post-ban, use of artificial trans fats for frying, baking, and cooking decreased from 50% to less than 2%. And you can see that that is still happening. And we also looked, we examined consumption before and after the regulation went into effect. And there has been a significant decrease in the mean trans fat content per purchase, and that decrease has been 2.4 grams. And then there's been an increase in purchases with 0 grams of trans fat from 32% to 59%. Moving on to the calorie labeling regulation, this actually occurred at the same time as the trans fat regulation, but there were a couple of legal hiccups that we endured for a couple of years, and so the rule finally went into effect in 2008, and Jennifer kind of went through a little bit of what will be required. It's very similar to the national menu labeling regulation, though again, ours covers 15 or more or restaurants that are one of a chain of 15 or more nationally. And here, again, went through a couple of why we implemented this earlier. You know, we know that people are eating out a lot. We know that they are woefully underestimating the amount of calories in restaurant foods. We know that point of decision calorie information helps consumers. And again, we know that this is feasible and can happen. There's been a lot of research done on the calorie labeling regulations, both in New York and in other cities. And I will say that the research is mixed, but two studies that have been done and looked at New York City specifically, one was a study that was done by the New York City Health Department, and we found that about 15% of consumers are actually using the calorie information. And of those that use the calorie information, they purchase about 100 fewer calories. And then there was a large Starbucks study of about 100 million cash register transactions, and overall they found there's a 6% decrease in the average calories purchased. And customers who average greater than 250 calories purchased 26% fewer calories. And so moving on to our most recent attempt to improve the nutritional quality of foods in restaurants, and that is the portion cap rule, which was passed by the New York City Board of Health in 2012. And what it simply does is it caps the sugary drink portion size at 16 ounces, as Jennifer mentioned. And again, here we really tried to look, we looked at several factors. One is that the consumption of sugary drinks nationally and in New York City is excessive. We know through the literature that sugary drinks are associated with weight gain in both adults and children and have been independently associated with increased risk of heart disease and type 2 diabetes. We also know that portion sizes have exploded in recent decades and significantly in the restaurant environment. If you look at McDonald's, for example, in the 1950s, the only size available was a 7-ounce cup. And today, the small size at McDonald's is 16 ounces, and it goes all the way up to 32 ounces at McDonald's, and in some other restaurants, as large as 64-ounce options do exist. So there was, significant interest over the last year of this rule, both through the media as well as our public comment period. And while we haven't, the rule has not been implemented due to the lawsuit, we do have some projections in terms of its impact. So Brian Elbel, who's a researcher in NYU, looked at local data using receipts that had been collected actually for a calorie labeling evaluation, and he found that calories from sugary drinks would increase under the rule only in the unlikely scenario that 80% or more of consumers would purchase and consume 2 16-ounce portions. And then Claire Wang looked at national data through N. Haynes and found that if 80% of consumers of large sugary drinks were to switch to 16 ounces, adults would save 63 calories per day and kids would save 58 calories per day. And the per capita calorie savings expected was to be greatest among overweight youth and adults. So we think that this is very promising. Just a very quick update. We are currently undergoing a lawsuit, and we will be going before the New York State Court of Appeals, which is the highest court in New York State, sometime in the next several months. So really, I think that, to summarize, I think the work is definitely in progress. I think the policy spread is very encouraging. There are more than 17 jurisdictions that have trans fat restrictions across the country. Calorie labeling will soon be nationwide. And many jurisdictions are looking into how to decrease the consumption of sugary drinks. Thanks.